Now back to the Ben Jarofsky Show, live from Chicago on WCPT 820.
We're having a bit of a biking theme today, the Ben Jarofsky Theater bit.
Oh my God! Was that Mr. Bike?
Yeah, Mr. Bike is in the studio.
Oh, he has
a bell. He does have a bell. So yes, we've been having a bike theme. Ben Jarofsky Theater dealt with the subject of the contrasting views that one has about what's going on in our streets if you're a pedestrian, B, a bike rider, or C, a motorist. You'll see the same thing. You'll have a different reaction depending on what you're doing. So I thought that would be an appropriate bit, given that Mr. Bike, Dave Glowatz, is in the studio. He's a bicycling instructor, freelance reporter, and author of a popular book called Urban Bikers, Tricks and Tips. And he's also my partner on a long-running podcast in which we pick apart city government. Young man, welcome to the show.
It's great to be here, Ben. Again.
Again. Dave Glowatz, and you rode your bike, correct? Oh, that's you. I thought that was Dennis.
Oh, that was him. That's what I said. He's making my job easy today.
Oh. So, Mr. Bike, Dave, let's start with Vision Zero, which seems to be the news of the day in the bike riding world. Tell us all about that.
Vision Zero is a plan promulgated by the Rahm Emanuel administration to cut to zero the number of traffic-related fatalities and serious injuries resulting from traffic crashes by the year 2026. And it has some step goals, like by 2020 to cut fatalities by 20% from an average of 100 per year. And the way that the city plans to do that is a couple ways. One is to improve intersections to make it safer for pedestrians. And they've identified about 300 intersections that they want to do that to. Having the CTA make access to train stations safer, but about 25 train stations. And the most immediate thing that just happened, the city council passed in July an ordinance requiring large trucks to have two new pieces of equipment, one being a convex side mirror so drivers can see what's next to their trucks more easily. And then for the hapless pedestrians who still don't get seen, to have what's called a side guard that keeps pedestrians who get hit by the side of a truck from getting pushed under the wheels and crushed, which is how some pedestrians tragically have been killed by trucks. And as I say, that was just passed by the city council to have a complete implementation on commercial trucks and city trucks by the year 2021.
So, in other words, they're going to give them 4 years to get up to code.
This is zero fatality and zero serious injury goal. So that'll be the metric, is that if, you know, people stop getting killed and bicyclists and pedestrians, in other words, non-motor vehicle users, what we call in transportation the vulnerable users.
Everybody's vulnerable out there. Some are more vulnerable than others.
If you've got a big SUV or truck around you, you're a little less vulnerable.
If you're in an SUV and you come up against a truck, you're vulnerable.
Yeah, yeah. The metric will be if they can cut those vulnerable user fatalities and serious injuries completely to zero reduce them.
When you were talking before, did you cite the number of fatalities that in bike accidents we've had over the last year? Did you say that number?
I didn't, but it doesn't change much in Chicago from year to year. It hovers from between 6 to 9 annually, and it doesn't over the years that I've been watching it. Not that I'm morbid or anything, but, you know, having used to work in transportation safety, that number stays pretty stable.
Now, in your view, and I know this is a controversial question, is in most instances when one of these accidents occurs, who's at fault, the biker or the motorist?
Well, it's an interesting question. As a bicycling instructor, whenever I hear about a bicyclist getting into a crash after expressing sympathy, I quiz them about what they did. And I find that in most cases, I can find something that the bicyclist could have done to prevent the crash or to avoid the crash rather than prevent it, avoid it. But that is not to say that the motorist didn't do something wrong. There is two very common car-bike crashes. One is dooring, which I'm sure you know about. And I'm sure many of your listeners have either have it had happen to them or know people who have done it, where you're riding along a street, a motorist or a passenger opens their door right into the path of the bicyclist, and some people die from that, but most people are just seriously injured. There was a recent notable Chicago musician and a producer who was doored and thrown out into traffic and then run over. You know, so that's the kind of thing that could happen. The second most common crash is what's called the right hook, where if you as a bicyclist are going straight through an intersection, a motorist will come up from your left, pass you, and then turn right in front of you because they don't see the bicyclist. They're not checking for bicyclists. The bicyclist's error, if you could call it that in that situation, is they're generally riding too close to the curb as opposed to keeping a straight line through the intersection.
Well, wait a minute. In defense of the bicyclist, the car has just passed the cyclist, correct?
Oh, I'm not saying it's not the motorist's fault.
Yeah, I'm just saying.
I'm just reverting back to my earlier shtick around, you know, there are things that bicyclists can do knowing that motorists make these mistakes to protect themselves.
So in other words, in your last example, did the motorists just never see the cyclist to begin with?
Correct.
Or did the cyclist just cease to exist in the motorist's eye as soon as the bicyclist was behind the motor?
All right, so imagine you're riding down Milwaukee Avenue here along a line of parked cars, and before the intersection, there are no parked cars. There's no parking zone. What do you do? Quite often, you as a bicyclist will then move over to the curb because you feel safer, you know, not out there in traffic. Well, what happens is from the motorist viewpoint, from the motorist coming up from behind, you have disappeared from sight. Mm-hmm. So they zoom through the intersection, make the right turn, and that's how the right hook quite commonly happens.
I see. Now, how about the instance we talked about, we made light of it, but it's not funny, in our opening bit, which I presume you missed because you were riding your bike here. And that is where this just happened to me. Was it yesterday? A motorist has his head down as he slowly made his way into the intersection while he was texting. Okay.
At least he was concentrating on something.
Yeah. Okay. That's reassuring. So what do you do there?
You just got to be really careful out there, Ben. There's far too many users, in my opinion, on the streets. And that's something we can talk about. You know, why do we have so many users? What are our priorities around travel in the city?
What do you mean by users?
Well, we have many, many more people in many more vehicles, whether it's bicycles or motor vehicles, than we ever used to have. Mm-hmm. Before, we used to have a higher concentration of person per vehicle density, if you will. Remember, we had streetcars. I mean, it was before you and I were born, if you can believe that. Mm-hmm. But streetcars was probably one of the biggest changes. You know, once they were eliminated, more people use personal automobiles to get around. If you go just down the street a little bit and look at the gridlock on the Kennedy Expressway and count the number of people in each car, what number do you get? You get one for each car. So we have a greater number of stuff, of things to watch out for on the road. And I believe that we're not going to be able to seriously affect traffic safety without cutting the number of vehicles on the street.
Mr. Bike in the studio with me, that's Dave Glowatz, and he's got the bell. I thought that was Dennis ringing the bell. By the way, during the break, I know Dennis took you into the hallway and showed you the newest thing on my bicycle.
And you thought they were Bull's Red pedals?
Yeah. What color do you think they are?
They look like a reddish neon orange.
Okay.
They're certainly visible. If you're trying to like be incognito, it's not going to work.
No, I'm not trying to be incognito. Although,
like, what are you pedaling there?
When I ride it, I'm wearing my Groucho Marx mask. So my pedals had literally fallen apart. So I went to the store, and the guy said, "Here, we'll sell you these. You can get red." I go, "Oh, get red. They're bold colored." And it turns out they're not. But anyway, yes, they are visible. So they're very cool.
The stock on neon orange, they just had too many. They're like, just tell them it's red.
Yeah, I know. They go, "I'll pay you another sucker."
So that's what's afoot.
Now, going back to what we were discussing, and this has to do with too many cars. I'm just going to say it. Too many cars on the street. And when you were describing the situation on a highway where you see so many cars where there's just one person, the driver, in the car, it's an absolutely waste of an automobile. It reminds me of that Larry David show. I don't know if you ever saw that one, where in California, they have the carpool lane, which is you have to have at least one other person beside the driver to get in the carpool lane.
Speak, we call it high occupancy vehicle lane.
Oh, wow. Okay.
HOV.
Okay. HOV. And so Larry David is alone, but he wants to get into the carpool lane to get to a Dodgers game. So he picks up a hooker and he puts her in there. Anyway, it's a funny
That's
Larry
the David. HO part of HOV.
God. Okay. We can't take him anywhere. So seriously, Dennis liked that. Seriously.
I thought you could talk to me about an inflatable dummy, which could also go in the same direction.
So how can we, as a city or a society or a state, encourage people to carpool or to drive less?
Well, let me turn that back to you, Ben. Of all the possible ways to get around town, aside from personal automobiles, what do you think is the easiest, most accessible form of transportation you could provide to the vast majority of people?
Walking?
I'm talking about a form of transport to get long distances. Like, you wouldn't walk to the studio today, right? You wouldn't do that.
No, but I would say bike riding, but most people don't ride a bike.
So what does that leave?
Cars? Public transportation?
Public transportation!
Well, I get it.
Took him a minute.
Hey.
So, but what are we doing, though? If you go to other cities, say, you go to Paris, and you look at the public transportation system, you look at the subway system, go to New York and look at New York's subway system. We could talk about the investment problem over there. Chicago, even though it has a highly lauded public transportation system, if you can't get on your bike, say, to come to the studio today, say it was raining, what would you have done?
I would have got my wife to drive me.
Yes, you would have gone in a personal automobile.
Yeah.
So my point is that most people don't have any other options because we have not seriously invested in public transportation that give people serious options to driving a car. You know, I'm not here to blame motorists for driving. They don't have a choice to get most places in the city. And you look at things like, I'll just pick one, like bus rapid transit. You've heard of that? Which manifests today as something called the Loop Link on Washington Street, which reportedly adds like maybe 3 miles an hour to the speed at which the Washington Street bus runs, you know? Whereas you go to a place like Quito, where I was not too long ago, they've got a decades-old bus rapid transit system that goes from one end of the city to the other, and it's just a bus, you know? It's like having an L in the middle of the street, but it's got a dedicated lane. It's got prepayments, so you're not waiting for people to board, and it goes, you know, and it's used by everybody. It's used by, you know, the wealthy as well as the, you know, the working class person. We could do stuff like that in Chicago if it was a priority. But what do we prioritize? Sending mayoral staff to California to check into Elon Musk's, you know, thing to tunnel under the Kennedy to send the elite to O'Hare Airport quickly. You know, what is that? What kind of priority is that?
Yeah, that's a great, and what Dave is alluding to, of course, is Mayor Rahm's dream, which he inherited from Mayor Daley, to have a super fast express service by train for wealthy visitors to our town, effectively, because they would charge a premium for it. It would go straight from O'Hare to the Loop. And by the way, just running essentially the same path of an existing train that is for the general public, of course, the Blue Line train. So, yeah, your point is it's a complete waste of priority and money, et cetera.
And so we have these, what I think of as Band-Aid plans. So we have this thing called Vision Zero. I like to call it Zero Vision because they're just looking at how do we retrofit existing corners and sidewalks so that the motorists have a little, you know, the thousands and thousands of motorists have a little harder time hitting people. Why not look at ways to give people options other than that motor vehicle? That's my point.
In your lifetime, and your lifetime is pretty long lifetime because it's the same one as mine. Have you ever seen an elected official of any kind who really advanced for the sorts of thinking that you just advocated?
Well, in my lifetime, we had two serious improvements to public transportation in Chicago, at least two that I can think of right off the top of my head. The Orange Line to Midway Airport, right, which didn't exist at all.
That is correct.
And extending of the Blue Line to O'Hare.
Yeah.
So that was an existing thing that they did. But at the same time, we had elimination of part of the Green Line.
Yeah.
You know, it was torn down because it was considered by the locals to be somehow bad for business. Yeah. And now many people
regret
that.
And the Pink Line. We had the Pink Line.
Oh, the Pink Line. Yeah. Yes. We had the Pink Line implemented. So we have been expanding.
We have been expanding very gradually, I would say. And we just had as a guest in the studio last week, a state representative from the South Suburbs named Al Riley, who is a big proponent of extending the red line to the city's borders at 130th. It would help his South Suburban District and the entire South Side. And Dave, as long as I've been in Chicago, and I've been here since 81, I've heard people talk about that plan and it never goes anywhere. And meanwhile, we'll have to do at least three rebuilds of the Brown Line,
right,
which is the Ravenswood line. So it just seems to me that there's a misplaced priority here.
And there's an alternative to that plan that doesn't cost us anywhere near as much. And I think you know what it is.
Wait, which plan are you talking about?
The one that extending the red line. line to the south side.
And that is?
To convert Metro Electric service to essentially CTA service.
Yes. I wrote about this.
There you go. So why don't we do that?
Yes. Well, answer your own question.
Well, again, it's political priorities. Why do we have a kludge for the universal fare card, which was mandated by state law? You know, we got a venture card that we could use on the CTA and on PACE. But if you wanted to use your Ventra on Metra, you got to have a smartphone. Well, who does that address? You know, it's just like it, quote, complies with the law, unquote. But it leaves so many people out of the universal fare card. Why don't we do that?
That's Mr. Bike, Dave Glowatz. As you can see, he should be running public transportation in the city of Chicago. And he bring his bell to the meetings.
Can you just leave that here, man? We'll use that. That could be a running thing, man.
With me in the studio, Dave Glowatz, known as Mr. Bike. We've been talking transportation issues in the city of Chicago. And he just gave a very passionate call for more public transportation. And I could not agree more. Let's see what Andy has to say. Hello, Andy. You're on the air with Dave Glowatz.
Hi, Ben. I got the solution for you guys.
Go ahead.
An expressway for bicyclists. And what I mean by that is using, like, those old train lines, like the 606 pathway, or what do they call those? The 606. But instead of just people, have it just used by bicyclists.
Dave, your thoughts on that?
Well, we already have some accommodation for bicyclists. So we do have a new trail called the 606 on the north side, and there's an effort to create one on the south side. The political will involved there is to eliminate streets that are carrying cars. And I go back to what I said before, that to eliminate the places that people use to drive cars is really, really hard for our politicians. So if we could provide more options, say, in form of transit, so people have another way to get around besides cars, I think it would make it easier to do the kind of thing that you're talking about.
There has to be a will, though. Before we let Dave go, I have a question for you, and that is this, young man. In the New York Times the other day, I saw that Mayor de Blasio of New York is talking about a congestion tax in New York, which will raise money for the city of New York. And that tax would work, of course, by it is effectively a toll on motorists who drive into New York City and drive into Manhattan, I should say, which is very congested during rush hour times. Any chance that that will ever happen in the city of Chicago?
Well, as you might know, in 2011, the City of Chicago Inspector General's office made that very recommendation about Chicago to have up to a $5 fee for motorists not only to enter the Central Business District, but to leave the Central Business District during business hours. Again, how do you get political will for that? That's the big question. And we have revenue needs. We clearly have revenue needs, and it'd be an easy way to grab revenue. But again, we don't want to punish people who have no other way to get into the loop. So if you're going to drive people, no pun intended, out of cars, where are they going to go? If you're increasing the usage of L-trains, you've got to increase capacity. So you can't do one without the other.
Right. That's true. I used to have this conversation. Oh, my God. The great Eugene Pinchum. We used to argue this point all the time. There are plenty of ways to get to the loop by public transportation. I mean, there's buses, there's trains, there's commuter lines. I mean, well, we even used to have an airport in the lake. There's no issue in regard of the means to get there. Don't you agree with me on that point?
Yeah, but if you ride the blue line or the red line or the green line into the loop at rush hour in the morning, they're quite often packed. So if you start moving some of the people who are driving onto those trains, like I said, you got to increase capacity somehow.
You have to increase capacity.
You got to spend some money.
We have to spend some money. We just had Kenneth Franklin in the studio here. He is the representative, the leader of the Transit Workers Union, the people who run the subway. And he was advocating for that big time. Hire more people. Run more trains.
Yeah, that's why I like something that you don't like, which is the flyover for the brown line and the red line to increase efficiency and the amount of volume, passenger volume that can be carried on those trains.
Okay, allow me to give my position on the, since you said it, in a perfect world, I would have no problem with the flyover, but the world is not perfect. The world is Chicago. And I cannot condone spending even more money on the Brown Line when we're going into, what, 50 years of not extending the Red Line from 95th to 130th. I just think that just shows that the city's priorities are out of whack.
Point taken. We should do both.
And if we can't do both, we should do 130th before we do a flyover, right? But no, this city would gild the Brown Line before, okay? We'd put it in gold.
The gold line.
All right, the gold line.
Like that.
All right, that's the great David Glowatz. Mr. Bike, you can find all his work at daveglowatz.com. That's DAVEGLOWACZ.com. Thanks for coming. We'll get you in sooner this time. Maybe do it on a monthly occasion,
it's
right?
It's been a pleasure. Thanks, Ben.